Well, I think you probably already know this, but just in case you don't know it, I'm going to remind you, today is, in America, one of the biggest party days of all of the year because of the Super Bowl. How many of you are either hosting or going to a Super Bowl party today? Okay, that's it. Only a few. So those people, you find them, you can go to their place if you're not already going to a party. This has nothing to do with the message. I'm just curious. How many think the Ravens are going to win today? 49ers, how many think 49ers are going to win? Okay, that's been true throughout the service. How many of you just learned right now that the Ravens and 49ers are playing today? All right, that might have been the biggest group right there. So once the Patriots are out, no one cares. So I want to talk a little bit about parties today. And it's interesting for me to talk about this because I don't particularly care for parties. I'm a little bit of an introvert, and so sometimes parties make me nervous. I can stand up in front of people like this and talk and be fine. I can sit down at a table with a small group and talk and I'm fine. But what really is hard for me is to throw me into a social mixer kind of gathering where, you know, maybe there's 30 or 40 people in a room and everybody's got an appetizer or a drink in their hand and they're all kind of mixing in different conversations. And I just get so anxious and nervous. I want to jump out a window or something. Is there anybody else here like me? All right. Okay. Some of you are just too introverted to even raise your hand. It's that painful. And I know because I can relate. And I've always been this way. When I was a kid in our elementary school, if it was your birthday, you know, they would throw a little party for you in the class. I don't know if they did this at your school, but the parents would bring in the cupcakes and you know, it'd be a little game and stop for a little birthday party. Well, I was so terrified I was so grateful that my birthday was December 27th, always in the middle of Christmas break. I never had to endure a class birthday party thrown for me. I know it's crazy, but that's how I feel about them. And so it's kind of ironic that I'm talking about this today, but I'm talking about it with some conviction because I think for a lot of us, we need to discover or rediscover the practice of celebration as an important spiritual practice. A lot of us tend to think that when we show up at church, we're going to hear about how to pray or how to read the Bible or how to give or serve other people. And those are all very good things that help to connect us with God and help to point toward His goodness with our lives. But sometimes what we do is we bracket off that section of our life and like that's the spiritual part of our life over here. And then there's all the other parts of our life that might include our work or our family or might be including the parties that we go to. But I want to look today with you at the life of Jesus and some of his teaching, and I think we're going to draw the conclusion today that we can make even our celebrations, even our parties, a way of practicing our life with God in a way that is enriching for us and good for other people around us. So that's what I hope we'll do today, and we're just going to walk through several stories and teachings from Jesus. One of the first things that we notice in Jesus' life when he was 12 years old, is that his family, he grew up in a Jewish, observing Jewish family, and so they made it a regular part of their life to participate in all of the fasts and feasts of the people of Israel. And so every year, once a year, they would go to Jerusalem for the Passover celebration. This is a week-long party, and it was a reminder to the people of God that back in the days when they had been slaves in Egypt, God passed over the Israelite homes, and he protected them. And so they were there in Jerusalem once a year for a week to celebrate the fact that God had provided for them in the past and was going to continue to do that into the future. And so it was a big celebration, and everybody went. But part of the clue for us that this was a regular part of their life, kind of a natural thing for them, was how comfortable they seemed. After the party was over, after the celebration of Passover, the family's on their way back home, and Jesus and his parents are separated. Jesus is left behind in Jerusalem, and it's a full day before his parents realize that they don't have their 12-year-old son with them. Now, I have a 12-year-old son, so it's kind of easy for me to imagine, you know, what Jesus might have been like as a 12-year-old, although I wish sometimes my son acted more like I think Jesus probably acted as a 12-year-old, but that's a different subject. There have been a few times when we've, you know, misplaced our son. You know, for a little while, we don't know where he is. maybe for 24 minutes, never for 24 hours, but they didn't realize Jesus wasn't with them. They probably thought he was with their aunt or uncle or cousins or whatever, and they had to go back and get him. But this was such a big part, a regular part of their life, that it was possible for them to even imagine not remembering Jesus. All right, later in Jesus' life, when he's 30 years old, he goes to another party, and he's there at least with his mom. Maybe some other family are there, but it's a wedding party. And at this point in Jesus' life, nobody would have been thinking of him as a rabbi, teacher. Nobody would have been thinking of him as the Son of God or the Messiah. Everybody knew Jesus as a carpenter. He was Jesus of Nazareth, Joseph's son. He was the town carpenter. Probably people at this wedding who knew Jesus thought of him as, oh yeah, that's the guy that installed our kitchen cabinets a couple years ago. Remember, you know? Or if you needed an addition put on the back of your house, Jesus was the guy you called. That's how people thought of him. Well, he's at this party, and in the middle of the celebration, which would have lasted several days, they run out of wine. Now, you've probably been at a party when people ran out of food or drinks, and you know, everybody's kind of crazy figuring out, what are we going to do? Well, somehow Jesus gets dragged into this. And it's his mom that drags him in. Mary comes to Jesus and says, hey, look, they ran out of wine. You need to fix this. And it's kind of interesting. Here's a little spat between Jesus and his mom, a little argument between the two of them, because Jesus says, Mom, it's not my time. It's not time for me to reveal my real identity. It's not time for me to show that I'm the Son of God, the Messiah. As John calls it, it's a sign that he's about to give of his identity. And she says, well, I don't care what time it is. She's like, I want you to fix this. And so 30-year-old Jesus apparently still obeys his mom. He does what she says. He goes and tells his servants to fill up these jars with water. And there were six jars, 20 or 30 gallons each. And he tells them to take a cup of it to the master of the wedding party. And so this water is delivered to him, and he tastes it. And, of course, it's been changed to wine. And the master of the ceremony says, this is the best stuff I've ever tasted. And he goes to the bridegroom. He says, I've never seen anybody do their wedding this way. Everybody else brings out the good stuff first. And once everyone's had a little to drink, then they bring out the cheaper stuff. You have saved the best until last. And from that moment on, whenever Jesus was invited to a party, he was never asked to bring chips or dessert. He was always in charge of the drinks every time. The Bible doesn't say that, but you know it's true. I mean, it had to be true. Another party Jesus went to, he had invited Matthew to be a disciple, to be one of his followers. And Matthew was a tax collector. Now, some of you probably know this, but tax collectors were, well, no one likes the IRS. No one likes tax collectors today. Forgive me if there are any of you here. But, you know, that's always been a bad. But in the first century, there was kind of a double problem. First of all, the people of Israel were under the government of the Roman Empire. And so they were upset about the fact that they didn't govern themselves. They were subjects of the Roman government. And so the Roman government, when they came in to collect taxes, they would hire local people to collect taxes on their behalf. So if you were a tax collector, you were viewed as a traitor. You worked for the bad guys. But on top of that, they were known to extort money from people. They had a bad reputation. If you owed $1,000 in taxes, they'd show up at your place and say, well, you owe $1,200, and they'd pocket the extra. So for a number of reasons, they weren't well regarded. But Jesus invited Matthew to be one of his followers. And Matthew is so excited that he's become a follower of Jesus, that he's been included, and he wants all of his friends to know about it. So he invites all of his tax collector buddies over to his house. He throws a big party. Now, the Pharisees are sitting back and watching this. And apparently it was enough a regular part of Jesus' practice that they began to make accusations that Jesus was going way overboard. In fact, here's what Matthew chapter 9 says about the accusations that were being made. Jesus says, and this is what others are saying, for John the Baptist came neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and you say, he has a demon. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and you say, here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Now, I'm not suggesting here that Jesus was a glutton or a drunkard, that he ate too much or drank heavily or anything like that. That's not the point. The point is, apparently, it was enough a regular part of Jesus' life to go to these kind of parties with lots of different people, that it was possible for those who were against him to make an accusation like this and expect that it would stick. It must have been enough a part of his life that somebody could say, he's a drunkard, he's a glutton. And people, they thought, might pay attention to that. Well, one of the parties that Jesus went to was a party that was thrown in his honor. You might remember the story, if you've heard this before, of the time when his friend Lazarus had died. And Jesus was close to Lazarus, but he was a long ways away when he heard the news. And so when he came to Lazarus to be with the family, they had already put him in the tomb. He'd already been buried. He'd been there for 4 days. But in spite of that, and this is one of the real pinnacles of the story of Jesus in the Gospel of John, Jesus calls Lazarus back to life, raises him from the dead, and everyone's astonished, and the family is elated, and so they throw a resurrection party. Of course, none of us have ever been to a party like this before, but I imagine it must have been spectacular, and they're all excited. They want to honor Jesus for what he's done. And so all of the Gospels tell this story, and there's little pieces we can put together. One of the things we learn is that this party is held in the home of Simon the leper. Now, you probably have heard of the disease leprosy. In the first century, it was believed to be a contagious skin disease. So people who had leprosy might have wounds on their skin, and that might even be rotting and all kinds of terrible things happening to their flesh. Well, people thought that it was a skin disease and that if you came close to someone with leprosy, that you would get the disease yourself. We now know, with today's medicine, that it's not a skin disease, it's a neurological disorder. And what happens is you don't feel pain. And so somebody would get a cut on their arm, they didn't realize it because they couldn't feel it, it would get infected, and it would turn bad. And so it wasn't really a contagious skin problem at all, but that's how people thought it worked. And so no one wanted to hang around with someone with leprosy. But you know, this is one of the things we see about Jesus throughout his life. He is always hanging around with the people that everyone else avoided. And so this party is held at the home of Simon the leper. And Lazarus is there. And Mary and Martha, his sisters, are there. Jesus is there. His disciples are there. And in the middle of this celebration, while they're all sitting around the table, reclining at the table, Mary comes out and she's carrying this very expensive jar of perfume. In fact, the text tells us later that it was worth a year's wages. Let's imagine a $50,000 jar of perfume. I don't know how you get that expensive, but that's what it was. And she comes out and she breaks it open and she pours it on Jesus' feet, which is a strange thing, but would have been more common to see someone having their feet washed or anointed at that culture. And everybody there is in astonishment. I mean, imagine if you're at a party and something like this happens. I mean, everybody's going to start whispering and talking and what's going on. Well, finally, Judas spoke up. And Judas said, what a waste. This was stupid. This is so foolish. This should have been sold, and the money could have been given to the poor. Now, let me ask you a question. Think about all that you've known about Jesus over the course of your life, everything you've heard about him, all of your perceptions of who Jesus is and what he values. And put yourself in this scene and imagine that you've just watched a woman pour $50,000 worth of stuff on Jesus' feet, and somebody else says, wait, that could have been used for something better. Isn't there a part of you that thinks that that's what Jesus would affirm? That Jesus would step up and say, yes, you know, that was kind of wasteful. We could have done something better with that. Could have helped a lot of people with that. And I'm not saying Jesus doesn't care about the poor. He talks a lot about helping people like that. But in this instance, Jesus said, Mary has done a good thing. Apparently, there are times when it's acceptable in celebration of what God's done to do some lavish things. And that's what happened. And that's what Jesus affirmed. And Jesus didn't just talk. He just didn't go to parties. He talked quite a bit about them, too. I just want to mention a couple of the things that Jesus said about parties, and then we're going to draw some conclusions and put things together here. In Luke chapter 14, Jesus said this, when you give a luncheon or dinner, now this is Jesus as Martha Stewart giving party planning tips here. So, you know, if you want to know what Jesus has to say about how to throw a great party, here's what he says. When you give a luncheon or dinner, Do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Now, this is interesting because it sort of cuts against a very subtle but real social phenomenon that all of us are aware of. If you want to have a great party, and especially if you're interested in sort of climbing up a social ladder, then one of the most important things about your party is the guest list. Who is invited? Who shows up at your party? You invite the right people to your party, and the right people show up. Guess what? Makes you look good, right? And we all sort of expect a reciprocal kind of thing. So if I invite you to my party, and it's fantastic, and then you throw a party, what am I expecting? I'm expecting an invitation, right? So this, in our world, sometimes, especially in certain circles, this is how you work. This is how you operate, inviting the rich neighbors, the right people. Jesus says, if you do that, you've already received your reward. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just you already got what you were asking for. But there's a more rewarding way to live. There's a more rewarding way to celebrate. And that involves including the people that aren't often invited, the people that most of the time get overlooked. One last story here is from Luke chapter 15. There's a great party that Jesus talks about. It starts, though, with a father who has two sons. And there's an older son who's he's obedient, he's respectful, he kind of falls in line. But then there's a younger son who's more of a free spirit, you know, does what he wants, a little more rebellious. Does this sound like anybody's family? Anybody know this family? All right. Okay, so that's the story. That's the setup. Well, the younger son says, I don't want to wait around for my dad to die to get the money from the inheritance, so I'm just going to ask for it now. So he asks his dad for his inheritance, and the father agrees. So here's this young son, and he's got all this money, and he goes off, and within a few months, he's blown it all on wild parties and crazy living, and he finds himself with no job, no place to live. He's desperate and hungry. He takes a job feeding slop to pigs, and he even thinks about eating the food that he's feeding the pigs because he's so hungry, which at least, as a sort of side note, is an indication to us that there is a way to party and celebrate that does not lead to a rewarding life. So we need to be aware of that. But here he is, so at the end of his rope that he says, you know what, it would be better for me to go back to my father's house and beg for forgiveness and become a servant in his, and maybe he won't even accept me as a son, but I'd go be a servant in his house. That would be a better way to live. So he humbles himself. He starts to turn toward home. And this is where I want to pick up where Jesus tells the rest of the story. He says, while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. You know, one of the things that frees us up to really celebrate, to enjoy life, to find all of the richness in it, is to know that we are loved and forgiven completely by our Heavenly Father. To know that when we turn to Him, no matter how broken, no matter how many mistakes, no matter how many flaws and faults, we are loved. He rushes to meet us. He loves us and He welcomes us home. And when you know that you're loved, it can free you up to celebrate His goodness. I know that I've told you earlier, I don't really care about parties, and particularly the ones that are for me, but one of my favorite parties ever was a party that was thrown for me right here, right in this room, in 2005. After my wife and I had been here serving with the church for 6 years, and helping to get things started, and we were preparing to move to another ministry, the current ministry that I have, this church threw a going-away party for me and for us, and it's one of my favorite memories ever. It was a roast. So I was mercilessly abused for several hours, or at least it felt like several hours, by people. Neil Flint was one of the key people, if you know Neil, but there were other co-conspirators. There were a lot of people in on this. And I mean, they found every vulnerable place in me. They knew right where to pry and make me uncomfortable. And so, for example, one thing is I've talked over the years here about the fact that I've never been happy with my physique. I feel like I have the body of a runner and a reader, and I always wanted like a more muscular physique. And I've worked at that with no success over the years, and so I finally just given up. But they knew this about me. So for this whole party, they forced me to wear one of those muscle suits, you know, that has like, I mean, I've never looked so good. It was the best I've ever looked. But I mean, they were just finding everything. I mean, it was people who know me, knew my flaws, my faults, my vulnerabilities, my weaknesses, and you know, they loved me anyway. I knew that I was loved no matter what by this great group of people. And I want you to know that that's how God feels about you. He knows every vulnerable thing. He knows every weakness. He knows where you've been, what you've done. But as soon as we turn back toward him, he races to meet us and wants to celebrate and wants us to live a life of celebrating his goodness to us. So when I put all of this stuff together, reading these stories of Jesus, his teaching, here's the conclusion that I've come to. I believe God is in favor of extravagant parties that include even the most unlikely people to celebrate his goodness. I think that's the kind of celebration God is for. He's in favor of sometimes lavish and extravagant celebrations that include people who are often overlooked and marginalized, all brought together to celebrate his goodness. So I want to ask you a question. I want you to think about something. I want you to think about something that could be on the calendar for you in the next month or 2 months or 3 months. Maybe something that's worth celebrating, a birthday, an anniversary, maybe an important milestone at work, something like that. And I want you to think about, I'm not asking you to commit to it, just think about this. Think about throwing a party for that occasion, but doing it in a way that's better than you've ever done before. Putting a little more time into it, a little bit more energy, a little bit more thought, maybe even a little bit more money. You don't have to go crazy with a $50,000 jar of perfume. But I mean, just put some extra attention to it, so much so that people, when they come to this celebration, are going to be surprised in a good way, like, wow, I didn't know it was going to be this good. And what if, in addition to doing that, as you thought about the guest list and all the people who should be invited, the natural people that would belong at whatever the party is that you're throwing, it's almost always the case that there's some people on the edges, people on the margins that, you know, you could invite, but that's a little awkward, that might be uncomfortable, or it'll be easier not to have them there. What if you just said, forget it, they're coming too? And what if in planning and executing this and the invitations and even the enjoyment of the party itself, what if you intentionally said to yourself, I'm doing this as an exercise in celebrating God's goodness to me and engaging all these other people in it too? You think it's possible for us to do that kind of thing in a way that would be every bit as valuable to our spiritual lives as prayer and reading the Bible and all these other things? I think it can. I think it should. And so I want to ask you to think about how you might incorporate this into your own life. Now, when we start to think about how we could do these things together and pull things like this off in an even bigger way, it can get pretty exciting. And I want to tell you a story in just a minute. Some of you know already that while Orchard Group helped to start Harbor of Hope back in 1999, now Harbor of Hope is helping other new churches get started here in the Northeast, but around the country and now around the world, through our ministry with Orchard Group. And so when you give a little bit here at Harbor of Hope, some of that money goes to help other people and other new churches that are getting off to starts, just like things happened here. And I'm grateful for that. So I want to say thank you for what you're doing as a church to invest in our ministry. And I'm excited about what God's doing. I mean, we have new churches that are coming up in Harlem, in Philadelphia, in Wilmington, Delaware, in Baltimore, right downtown in Baltimore. There's a new church being started in San Francisco. We just opened one in Ireland, Japan. So it's really fun to be a part of seeing churches like this that are starting up all over the place. But I want to tell you about one in particular because this story, I think, serves a great purpose for our message today. There's a new church that we helped to start in California, in Ventura, California, called Mission Church, that opened up a year ago. And they're doing great. They meet in the movie theater. They have about 300 people gathering every Sunday now. They're really growing. And just a side note, Jeff Oakes here on staff, his brother, T.D. Oakes, is the worship leader for that new church. So that's kind of a cool connection. But about a year ago, they started thinking, right when they were getting started, they were thinking, how are we going to serve our city? What could we do to make a big difference, to love our community? And it was, they were thinking about prom season that was approaching that spring, and so all the students from middle school and high school were going to their proms. But they, when they thought about it a little bit more, they realized there's always a group of students that are not going to be participating in the prom. And sometimes that's just because they don't get invited or they would feel awkward if they went. And they started zeroing in on kids, students with mental and physical disabilities who, you know, again, sometimes they don't get invited to be a part, or even if they could come, they would feel too awkward, or maybe their parents are afraid that if they go, how they're going to be treated. And so they just don't always get included. They're marginalized. And so Mission Church said, what if we threw a prom for the kids that don't usually go to the prom, the kids that have these challenges? And so they started thinking big. They said, what if we got the whole community involved? And so they went to people who are hairdressers and said, would you fix the hair of the girls for this thing? And they said, yes. And they went to people that have dress shops and tuxedo shops. And they said, would you provide the clothes for the kids for this party? And they said, yes, we will. And they went to caterers and said, would you bring the food? Yes. They went to limo drivers. Would you pick these kids up and bring them? And they said, absolutely. And so they threw a massive prom for these kids that often don't get included. And I want to show you a little video that just captures a little of what they were able to pull together. I can't tell you how many times I've watched that, and I always start crying every time. I just think that's the kind of party that Jesus is in favor of. And we could do it big, but sometimes the reason we don't do the big things is we don't start out by doing the small things. And so I want to end today just with a few questions that you can ask yourself, and I can ask myself, to say, how can we bring this practice of celebration as a spiritual practice into every part of our lives? So here's some questions that I think can help. Number one, am I making time today to celebrate even the smallest of victories? Doesn't always have to be a big thing, But am I stopping and saying, what am I thankful for? How has God been good to me? What can I do right now with the few people who are with me just to stop and celebrate God's goodness, the small victories? Another question, when am I going to find time this week away from work just to play? I mean, we do this in a lot of other areas with disciplines, like we think, I'm going to carve out time to pray. I'm going to carve out time to go to church. I'm going to carve out time to read the Bible. But what about stopping to say, I'm going to have some fun and make it a way of celebrating God's goodness? I think that's an important practice. Another thing, another question, since I have to get this done right now, is there a fun way to do it? Sometimes, you know, maybe instead of carving out separate time, maybe we can incorporate celebration and this kind of attitude of thanksgiving and God's goodness right into the normal things of life. So if I have to fold the laundry right now, how can I drag my kids into it and make it a fun exercise? I don't know. If you figure that out, let me know. But maybe this is a good question to be asking. How can I do what I'm doing in a fun way? Another question, who could I show up and surprise and take to lunch today? What if we just started thinking about once a week doing little miniature surprise parties for people for no reason and making it intentional that it would be a person that often doesn't get that kind of attention? Just grab a few people and say, you know what, I'm showing up at your office, showing up at your house, we're taking you to lunch, it's a surprise, and it's a party, and it's for no good reason other than to celebrate God's goodness. Another question, what story have I heard recently that made me laugh, and who needs to hear it? Just cultivating a way of taking celebration with us wherever we go. All of these are just simple questions to basically get at, how can I make the practice of celebration a regular part of my life? To appreciate God, to show my gratitude for his goodness to me, and then to include as many people in that as possible. So I'm going to pray that God will teach us and help us to make that happen. Father, we are so grateful for how good you've been to us, and we're reminded today how through this story about the son who is so far off from you, that's really our story, every single one of us, that we are at our own, on our own, we are broken and in desperate need of you and your help and your love and forgiveness. And we are so thankful that when we stand up and turn toward you, that you run to meet us and that you love us who we are, how we are, and you welcome us into your family to make us the people you want us to be. So thank you for that. And in response, Father, I pray that you'd help every one of us learn how to live lives that are joyful celebrations everywhere we go, with intentionality, including others, for your glory. In Jesus' name.